Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The home, studio, and woodland garden, collectively called Manitoga, of modernist designer Russell Wright is located in Garrison, New York. Manitoga is a National Historic Landmark, an affiliate site of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and a World Monuments Watch site. Manitoga, the Russell Wright Design Center's 2015 resident artist, is Stephen Telaznik. After spending much of a prestigious artistic career in drawing, his first major sculptural installation was a commission from the Japan Society in New York City. His first large-scale outdoor commission was from the Storm King Art Center in Mountainville, New York, where he designed and built Stream, a temporary site-specific bamboo structure covering 3 acres. In recent years, his work has been added to the collections of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the National Gallery of Art, the Pompidou, and the Whitney Museum of Art. For Manitoga, he's created Sanctuary, a large-scale installation comprised of woven reed structures that floats in Manitoga's quarry pool. Telaznik and I sat on the edge of that pool earlier this week to discuss his work. We began with how he'd come to be Manitoga's resident artist this year.
Well, it was a chance invitation by the director, Allison Cross. I was visiting about a year and a half ago for the first time with a mutual friend and was enamored with the place. And as a card-carrying site-specific artist, I found the environment suggesting something almost immediately in terms of some sort of artistic dialogue with the environment.
How did you begin your work in site-specific installations? When did you start, and what got you into that in the first place?
Well, I'm a novice. I haven't been doing it really that long relative to the amount of time I've spent in the career of an artist. But I kind of backed into it as a result of a challenge. And I had started making sculpture in about 2002 and did my first site-specific piece in 2006 at the Japan Society in New York City. And I was only interested in large-scale sculpture, but never had the opportunity. I drew for 30 years before I ever made a piece of sculpture. And that was the curse of art school, because art school is not always the place where you learn to be free. But I had an early interest in making sculpture as a child, but then became educated and realized that there was it was an exercise in futility during the academic years to do it. But in terms of working out of doors, it was a cork and a string. I really hadn't planned on it. I did my very first large-scale outdoor site-specific piece at the Storm King Art Center, and that was a little over 5 years ago. So I am still investigating, and I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of wonderful sites in which to engage. I generally tend to want to work out of doors with temporary site-specific. I am of the opinion that there's no room for too much permanent outdoor sculpture, because unfortunately people have to live with it way past its point of endurance. So the idea of working in nature, and nature is this organic matter that's constantly changing. So I think it's wonderful when you have the opportunity to make sculpture that evolves or changes over a period of time.
When you moved from drawing into sculpture, when you started tackling that muse, how did you flex your muscles? How did you know what materials you would want to work with?
Well, what it was going to look like was actually the bigger issue for me, because my drawings had always been about a three-dimensional vision. I had never studied sculpture and wanted to investigate three-dimensional construction, but didn't know what I was going to make of it, and I didn't want to illustrate my two-dimensional drawings by making sculpture. I wanted to follow a parallel track, but not necessarily have them intersect. And I took a step backwards when I started making sculpture, in that I reverted to an interest in model making that I had had as a child, and remembered also an experience that I had when I was living in Rome, where I would spend a great deal of time at the Vatican Museum looking at models of the Vatican and thinking that if I ever made sculpture, it would look something like this. But I wasn't sure. I had no ambition to make models of basilicas. But I did like the intimacy and the suggestion of large scale on a very interesting dialogue between the two. I started by using balsa wood and basswood, which is really our traditional model making tools for the architect. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't particularly keen on mathematical resolution to model making. I was the kid who could never put the model together because I hated instructions. manifest today in terms of, you know, trying to put together an IKEA couch. But it was, I really loved the materials of model building, because if you have no expertise in materials, it's best to work with something that you feel almost familiar with. And my first ventures into sculpture, serious sculpture, as a child, was to work with toothpicks. And the first sculpture that I ever made, around the seventh grade, that was serious, formal, was a roller coaster that was made out of toothpicks, which was in response to a competition from, at that time, Elmer's Glue, which was a very new product. And the advertisement was, make something new with Elmer's Glue. And I remember having had just visited Hershey Park, Pennsylvania, and going on my very first roller coaster, and how that traumatized me to no end, with the image of a roller coaster embedded within my brain for many, many years. And was really intrigued with more the look of a roller coaster as opposed to the feel of being in a car. So I've never been in a roller coaster ever since, but I do seek out unique roller coasters generally made out of wood. So that was how I first engaged three-dimensional materials again, and slow forward 40 years after those initial investigations of building roller coasters, I started building visionary pieces of public art, where I would come up with a location in Manhattan and I would construct a model for a piece of public art that was never going to get built. But it was the idea that I accumulated this collection of small-scale models of large-scale projects. And that to me was very intimate and very clumsy and very awkward, because I'm not trained in woodworking, but I use wood and wire cutters to cut the wood in a very direct way that was similar for me to using a pencil on a piece of paper. It was very simple and very direct, and no measurement.
You mentioned that you, when you first came to Manitoba, you had an immediate response. Can you expand on that? Tell us about the response and how that grew into building Sanctuary.
Well, when I was first trying the genre of site-specific, and I really did not know how to approach it, a good friend who passed away a couple years ago by the name of Lebius Woods informed me that the best way to engage a certain site was simply, if you felt the piece, then it was the right place for the piece. And I've always tried to enlist that simple approach to site-specific. So I remember driving up the very long, winding driveway at Manitoga up to the house, getting out of the car, hearing the waterfall that's just behind us, walking to the edge, seeing the pond, and almost immediately envisioning a piece that belonged there. So that was the initial response. And usually, as we tend to do, we go through a series of problem solving, trial and error, going through an entire litany of ideas that might work, only for me to go back to the very first impulse, which was envisioning the construction of a large scale shell, something that you might find at the beach or on a walk on the beach, and how that might engage that environment. And so that begat the largest piece in this installation, which is called Nimbus, the cloud. It was a very simple, intuitive process without a lot of overthinking. The idea was to just go with my initial response.
It is, I see, six pieces in the quarry pond. You mentioned Nimbus, the largest one. How are each of the others inspired? What do each of them stand for? What do they mean to you?
Well, I've always been interested in the drawings of the 19th century naturalist Ernst Haeckel. And I've always tried to envision how a lot of his drawings would manifest themselves into three-dimensional structures, but without imitating what he does. And came here and initially thought in terms of the microscopic world of nature. And I don't do preliminary drawings for any of my work. So it was a matter of just going ahead and drawing with the materials that happened to be three-dimensional and coming up with shapes that I felt were indicative of both the tightrope between that which is natural and that which is man-made. And that was enhanced by my experience of walking through Russell Wright's house. So that it was pretty easy to come up with these shapes by not thinking about them too much, but also trying to think in terms of them being in a distant lineage of product design, so that they are objects, and they are objects that have the potential to be intimate, yet they can be very large at the same time. And they are very much about drawing, which is really the premise of most of my work, which is linear structures. And that really comes out of a love for line and how a simple line is able to engage the viewer as well as the artist. It's not an involved story more than that. It was a walk through the house to examine the contents that helped to nurture what these structures might look like.
How did you determine that you wouldn't pre-draw your sculptures once you started doing sculpture?
Well, I always find that by drawing them, that the sculptural process becomes an imitation of what you draw two-dimensionally. And I don't like that because I don't want to be restricted by the ambitions of trying to recreate something two-dimensional in a three-dimensional format. So since I never studied sculpture or architecture formally, I never saw the relationship between 2D and 3D. And immediately was able to dance between those two dimensions without thinking in terms of them being necessarily separate. So it was easy for me to use line, in this case a three-dimensional physical line of material, to relate to the pencil line on a piece of paper. And I've never been able to draw my sculpture, and I've never been able to do preliminary drawings for a sculpture.
Sanctuary is here until November, and you mentioned your site-specific installations are temporary and are subject to the elements. Could you talk more about the temporary nature of this piece and what you think will happen to it over the course of the summer and into the fall?
Well, hopefully it will survive the summer, but one never knows in dealing with nature. But we have a pretty good track record in terms of creating structures that will survive a variety of climates. One of the pieces in the show, entitled Endurance, was actually installed at Manitoga on the pond, in the pond, in October of last year, and survived the winter. And I felt that by surviving a Hudson Valley winter, that the pieces might possibly survive a Hudson Valley summer. Endurance, for those that are not familiar with the story of Ernst Shackleton, the Endurance was the name of his boat, and he was an explorer of the early 20th century who took a group of 30 sailors to Antarctica on a wooden boat with the idea of doing exploration. The boat eventually became stuck in the ice. Eventually, the ice crushed the boat, and the 30 sailors who lived on the ice for an entire year were eventually rescued, and all of them survived. And I thought it was ironic that the boat was called Endurance and the boat didn't survive. Mm-hmm. So the ambition here is to identify a piece as having to assume that responsibility of the object that survives the seasons. And this piece did survive a pretty snowy winter and a lot of cold and a lot of wind, and it endured, which is what it was supposed to do. So that's a part of the show as well, the part of the installation. But the rest of the pieces are going to change as the summer sun slowly changes the patina of the surface. I don't expect the infrastructures to change that dramatically, but one never knows because it is nature. But they have a lifespan, and the beauty of working with natural materials is that eventually they will lead to the demise of themselves. They will survive, but they will live on an indefinite amount of time. But we don't know what will happen to them, and that's part of the intrigue.
From your initial moment with the quarry pond, your initial inspiration to execution, the piece is in place now. Is this as you envisioned? Are you pleased with your work?
I'm pleased. Not satisfied, but fortunately, the satisfaction is going on to the next project. But each project creates a set of challenges that I attempt to negotiate with that will lead to a next project, a continuum. And in this particular project, we're playing with a pure infrastructure piece without woven reed. There's a reed skin on, a woven reed skin on all of the pieces except the one. And that piece is in honor of the spider, who the spiders took over one of my pieces at the Denver Botanic Gardens. This was 3 years ago, and I received a frantic call from someone at the garden who said, "Mr. Talaznik, your piece is being overwhelmed and destroyed by the spiders, and there are spider webs in it, so we're going to remove the spider webs." And I thought that was exactly what I didn't want to have happen. So the expectation was to create an arena for the spiders so that even they could become appreciators of public art. But the idea is that it's created with the idea that animals will invade it. And that leads to the notion that in site-specific, there should be that percentage which is about experimentation. And that leads back to the spirit of Russell Wright, because it was as much the visit to the house as it was to the grounds that inspired what I've done. And one, I've never met Russell Wright. I did not know a lot about Russell Wright before the project. But the one thing that I think he and I share is a mutual interest in experimentation and invention. And how that manifests itself in his work is seen throughout the house upon visit, where some experiments work and some don't. And you see that through the material selection. And I am hopeful that most of my experiments will work, but it's the idea that experiment breeds a tremendous anxiety and fascination with continuum. So it was the selection of materials on my part that was inspired in part by his, Russell Wright's, examination of materials.
It has been wonderful to sit here with you and speak with you about your work. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're quite welcome.
Manitoga, the Russell Wright Design Center, is in Garrison, New York. Stephen Talasnik's Sanctuary will be on view in the Quarry Pool through November 9th. This Saturday, there's a members-only reception to launch Stephen Talasnik's Sanctuary. On Saturday, May 16th, there will be a sunset tour of Manitoga at 5:30, led by architect and Manitoga board member Tom Krismanek. For information about those and the myriad other tours and events at Manitoga, check out visitmanitoga.org. We've posted links to the Manitoga site and to Stephen Talasnik's site at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.